It's time for Mac Geek Gab, and listener Jim brings us our quick tip of the week. In any browser, you can drag an image from a website over the new tab button to load that image in a new tab. This works with hyperlinks, too. This approach is helpful when a web page takes over the contextual menu to prevent the browser's open image in new tab from showing. For hyperlinks, you can also shift-click to open in a new tab or command-click to open in a new background tab. Lots of quick tips sort of baked into one. More like this, plus your questions answered today on Mac Geek Gab 1039 for Monday, May 27th, National Sunscreen Day, also Memorial Day here in the United States, 2024. Welcome to Mac Geek Gab, the show where you send in quick tips just like that one. You send your, easy for me to say, you send in your questions. We try to answer them. We try to even speak while we're doing that. And you send in cool stuff found. We provide some cool stuff found too. We do this, because we love it. We love it. We know you love it. That's why we're all here. And B, so that hopefully every time we get together, we can each learn at least five new things. Sponsors for this episode include Ecamm.live. We're using promo code MacGeekGab at checkout. Gets you 1 month free. And Fastmail.com/MGG, where you can go to get you get it free for 30 days. And then 10% off your first year of the email provider that I use for my my main inbox. So we'll talk more about both of those in a little bit. And for now, here in Durham, New Hampshire, where it finally has started to feel like summer, I think we skipped spring, I'm Dave Hamilton.
And here on the windswept plains in South Dakota, I'm Adam Christensen. It's windy.
Oh, there you go.
Thanks.
Not windy here, finally, for once. Yeah. And also in southeast New Hampshire, Pilot Pete. Good to be back with you, gents. Making this a regular thing. This is cool.
Yeah, the three of us, 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah. What are the odds?
What are the odds? Well, somebody could calculate those. Maybe we could even just feed ChatGPT with the URLs to all the recent episodes, and it could figure out the percentages. Which would be, I think it actually probably would, right?
Like probably could. Yeah.
Because we do list the, like the, you know, who was in attendance.
Who's here and who's not.
Yeah. Present right. accounted
well,
for.
Right? I'm glad all of you listening are in attendance.
That's what ChatGPT doesn't know. Quite frankly, we don't know either. We don't track you in any way. So, I mean, we do count when people download the show, but that's we don't know.
That's
who.
It.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
But that's we're glad cool. you're here.
We are glad you're here. Absolutely.
Because if you weren't here, we wouldn't be here.
I mean, I'd still want to have all these conversations, but we probably wouldn't.
Wouldn't be as regular if no one else is listening. It wouldn't be as regular.
No, you're right about that. Yeah.
You give us purpose.
Purpose.
A porpoise. Yeah.
Sorry. The Rocky Horror thing in my brain. I can't.
State lines and porpoises. And,
you know, state lines and porpoises. Right. Yeah, if there was ever a flipper.
Should do.
Yeah. What's that?
Some quick tips.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You want to do more quick tips?
I do.
I got one.
Yeah, let's do. You got
Mark.
One for us?
Yeah. Mark says, I can't count the number of times I've used Preview, and a large subset of that use was to rotate a PDF or photo. The little box with the curved arrow above it in the toolbar will rotate the file to the left. I just clicked it 3 times if I needed to rotate it to the right. So, going around the horn. Today I found out, though, that you can hold the Option key down, and when you do that, the arrow moves and will rotate the file to the right.
Brilliant.
Amazing.
Yeah,
they will do
like,
that.
Are you kidding me? I went and looked at that. I'm like, son of a bad word. He's right.
You didn't know that? That works in photos, too.
Wait, what?
FYI.
Oh. Okay.
I bet it works in all kinds of different apps.
Yeah, the other thing The other thing I'll add is if you use a trackpad too, you can do the whole rotate gesture if you haven't disabled that in settings. But yeah.
Interesting. Right.
Yeah, I've done that before.
Use your two fingers and twist it.
Yeah. So I've done that before accidentally at times, but
yeah.
But yeah, no, it'll. Huh. That's crazy.
All right. I was just looking in. I was looking on my iPhone because, you know, you can go into it. It's weird. You go edit on a photo and then you get to crop, which crop also has like the rotate arrows on it, but it doesn't say crop and rotate. But you go to that and then you get the little rotate thing at the top of the screen, which also goes left. There's no like if you press and hold on it, it doesn't go right. Like on the iPhone. Yeah. From what I found, you have to go the three times. Three lefts do make a right.
Maybe someone does know the trick on iOS, but yeah, this is definitely a Mac tip.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Right. Yeah.
Man, like a caveman having to click three times on the phone.
I've always clicked three times in preview, so thank you. Yeah.
But I do think if you have a Magic Keyboard or a keyboard in an iPad, it will work. And probably if you Bluetooth connected a keyboard to your iPhone, which you can do also, you can do it too on your iPhone if you really wanted to. I've never had much need to connect a Bluetooth keyboard to my iPhone, but you could do it.
My guess is you could also USB-C a keyboard to your iPhone if you so desired.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh.
Yeah.
Okay. I love having conversations like this, and I love sharing conversations like this because you brought it up as sort of an absurd extension to the thing we were talking about. And that makes perfect sense. But there's like one person out there who needs to do something like that. And that's going to stick in their brain. And it's like, oh, my God, I never thought about this. And so, that's one of the things I love about doing this show is that there's enough of us in the Mac Geek Gab family here that the things that are sort of the extreme logical extensions of a discussion actually are relevant to, a percentage of us.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah. Brian 8944 in the Discord chat at live.macgeekab.com said, so many things I learn about the option key listening to this show. It's true.
Right.
Try the option key, folks. Like, yeah.
That key is
everywhere.
Gold.
Everywhere. It
seems more useful than the control and command keys put together. I swear to God. Not that those aren't useful. You need them. But the option key does so many cool things.
I agree.
Yeah. Right. Just go into an app, hold down the option key and look at every menu and option on option and see what changes. Is a great way
and
to learn.
And command option.
Yeah.
Control option and see it change there too. So
love it.
Just play with it.
Love it.
So,
all right, you want to take us to Daoud?
I do, because here's the cool thing that I found out. A couple cool things. So Daoud is from NorCal, and so I'm going to throw some aviation trivia in there, everybody. So when you're going into Oakland, San Francisco area, you talk to NorCal Approach, because that's Northern California. Wow. When you're going into LA or Ontario, you talk to SoCal Approach, Southern California. So that's what NorCal and SoCal is for those who aren't aware. But Daoud from NorCal writes in and says, I wanted to share a quick tip about quickly switching apps on any Apple device with a home bar. I've tested this on the iPhone and iPad. Instead of lifting up on the home bar until it shows your recent apps and then going back through them, you can just drag the home bar to the right to go back to your most recent app, or you can swipe back a few apps until you get to the one you were looking for. And now it will be the most recent app, but not all the apps you swiped between it and the one you started from. This has made switching back and forth, even when you don't have the arrow in the top left corner pointing to Safari or Mail or whatever previous app you were in the top left corner, makes it switching back and forth a whole lot easier. And my response to Daoud was, whoa. I didn't even know what a home bar was. It's that little white bar at the bottom of your iPhone screen. It's about an inch long when you're in an app. It's not there in your home screen, but when you have an app up and there's a little white bar at the bottom, that's your home bar.
It's
not
true.
Your homeboy. That's your home bar.
Well, and we're all so used to using it because we don't think about it this way necessarily. No. But
I swipe up until I get all my amps.
It is the thing that you swipe up on, even though, like, we probably don't think of it that way, but Apple thinks of it that way. When we're swiping up from the bottom, we're actually swiping up on that home bar, right? And and so that's the so it does other things, but yes, just swiping to the left or swiping to the right or to the left, depending. The one thing, well, the one thing that gets weird is Apple's decision as to when it reorders the apps.
Yeah,
is something that's a little wonky.
Yeah, I think if you go back, let's say you have five apps and you go back three apps right away, that becomes
app number
your
one.
Most recent one.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But if you go one and then you go two and you wait too long and you go three, it doesn't reorder. It's weird.
It's
so
weird.
But here's how bad it was. I had to Google home bar in iOS. I had no idea what the home bar was.
You didn't know what it
was
called? No, yeah, that's fair. Yeah, of course.
What's the home bar? So,
yeah, what did he install on his phone? Yeah.
Do you know why it's called the home bar?
Well, it used to be a home button down there.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So when they replaced the home button, they needed some sort of visual indication of, like, how do you get home? How do you do the home button things? And so they added the little bar, home bar.
Huh. It just became a natural thing in using iOS because iOS is most of the time really intuitive.
It is.
Never knew what to call it.
You know, we complain about the nitpicks of like, you know, the timing of the reordering of apps, for example. But iOS is insanely intuitive. Yeah.
It really is. If you think not, hand an iPad to an 18-month-old.
I remember when I'm sure I've told this story on the show before. We had a review iMac from the Elo Touch folks. So it was a touchscreen iMac, like a Bondi blue iMac that was retrofitted to be touchscreen.
Okay.
And it was sent to us to test it out. And either they never wanted it back or it took them a long time to want it back or whatever. So it wound up, kind of putting it in our daughter's room when she was, like 18 months old, maybe two. I don't know. And I remember maybe a little older, maybe two and a half. And I remember one day, you know, we set up some games for her on it or whatever, and it was fine. Like, it worked great. And one day she came and she's like, "Daddy, I need help with something on my computer. I don't quite understand because I can't read what it's asking me.
My differential calculus has got me stumped."
Exactly. She's like, I need you to tell me what the words say. And I was like, okay. And I realized that she was about halfway through installing Acrobat Reader, which is what we used to use to read PDFs before Preview was there. I guess she still could. And I was like, wait, how did you get, like, what, how did you get here? Like, it was fine. You know, I was more impressed than anything else. And I realized, oh, wow, even without being able to read, she knew to click on the yes button because that one was the, you know, in standard dialogues, that's the one that's highlighted. So she got herself to a point where she could read. And then I think the EULA came up and that did not have a default yes or no on it. So she was like, I don't know what to do here because, you know, she couldn't actually read. And it was like, man, look how, to your point, look how intuitive this stuff is. It's fascinating.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. It really, it was, you know, it was like, we all knew it that it was intuitive, but to see it in action, like, wow, somebody that can't read was able to get this far on this. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a guy actually call me a couple weeks ago. Wasn't there. Then I got a text message from about a half hour later. He goes, sorry. That was my grandson playing with my phone.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And you know the story about Woz with his favorite prank calls? Oh.
No.
So Woz has always been Steve Wozniak, co-founder of Apple Computer, just in case there's anybody who doesn't know. Kids, ask your parents about Woz. But Woz has always enjoyed repeating numbers, patterns, things like that, right? It's just, it's like, it's a thing. So, fine. When it became possible to get an 888 number instead of just an 800 number, like when 888 was approved as the area code here in the United States for toll-free numbers, was immediately signed up for one and got 888-888-8888. All eights, because he was like, this would be amazing to have this thing. And Woz, nowadays, Woz is a little more difficult to reach, but really not that difficult to reach. But for a long period of time, if you called him or emailed him, he would answer his phone or reply to your email. It got to a point where that was sort of impacting his quality of life. And Janet, his current wife. No, Janet really kind of took over sort of managing that part of it for him, because he's just such a warm, kind guy, and it wound up taking, no one individually that I know of was taking advantage of him, but en masse, this wound up sort of dominating his life. So, but anyway, this was back before that had happened. And so, you know, he would always answer the phone when it rang, and he had it going to his main phone, whether that was a cell phone at the time. I can't remember the timing of things, but it was like the phone that Woz would answer. So anybody who dialed 888 or all eights would, you know, would get Woz. And, he started getting a lot of prank calls on this number and would listen, and finally realized, and he thought it was the coolest thing, but eventually he had to stop using it. But babies were making their first prank phone calls to Woz, because they would pick up the phone and just start hitting numbers, and until, you know, like they keep hitting the eight. They didn't only hit it 10 times. Like they'd hit it, you know, until Woz started talking, and then they'd be like, oh, hey, you know. But it wasn't until he heard, like, you know, the voices of parental figures in the background saying, hey, what are you doing with the phone? Woz loved it. But it got a little disruptive for him to have, you know, prank calls from babies. Yep.
Funny.
Yep. Yep. So, yeah. Yeah. So anyway, memory lane. PC Unix has our next quick tip. He says, I was being driven crazy. My Apple Pencil was erratic, sometimes not working, sometimes working. I tried rebooting. I tried repairing. I did a forced restart. Nothing helped. Then I used Messages to contact Apple support. Great way to contact Apple support, by the way. They asked, is the tip of your Apple Pencil loose? By gosh, he says it was. He says all I had to do was tighten it and everything was fine again. This was in our Discord at MacGeekUp.com/Discord, and Robster replied. He says, I had the exact same problem with the previous Apple Pencil. It was working fine for a long time, then just stopped, even though it was still charging okay. Took it into an Apple store on a whim with my iPad, and their pencil worked fine but on my iPad, but my pencil did not work on theirs. Then the genius looked really closely and said, it looks like there's a small crack in the tip. Swapped the tip from the Apple Store pencil, and all burst to life. So, yeah, there you go. Randy Walker says he fidgets with his a lot and is screwing and unscrewing it constantly, which, yeah, can cause this. Yeah.
And then the genius sold him a 4-pack for $20.
Ow. Is that how much that is?
Yes. Yeah, they're about $5 a piece. Unless you go to the link in our show notes where you can get 4 for just over $6.
I see a link in the show notes. Oh yes, a 4-pack for a 4-pack is $6.99. A 2-pack is $4.59. So yeah, there you go.
From Amazon. It's slightly cheaper than $5 a pop.
That seems 20.
And anybody who's had an Apple Pencil and dropped it is gone. Oh, son of a bad word.
Yeah,
they do give you one originally, or they did.
Do give you a spare. That's true. Yeah.
I've never replaced mine.
But. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, that seems.
I'm sorry.
$7 seems like a
little
right
more
place.
Reasonable.
Yeah, a little more reasonable. $20 for just the tip is too much, I think. Yeah.
So, well, you get 4.
Okay.
Still. You know, but still $5 a pop.
Yeah.
I know. Just the tip.
You want to take us to Grumpy there,
let's
Adam?
Let's move on before this goes way off the rails. Grumpy says, I found I was having this issue on my Mac Mini some years ago when I had both the wired and with the wired Ethernet and the Wi-Fi on the same network. I was doing this to get Apple continuity goodness, which generally requires both Bluetooth and Wi-Fi. Then I learned that the Wi-Fi just needs to be on does not need to be connected to the network if the machine is already on the network by another adapter. Since disconnecting the Wi-Fi from the network, I have never had the naming issues again, and I probably should have started with the title, which it says, when Ethernet is connected, the issue was enabling Wi-Fi.
So the issue...
I'm having trouble reading that.
Yeah, no, the... Sorry, that's my fault. I named it... the issue that this solves... sometimes is when you see the name of your Mac starting to get those numbers after it in the network preference pane, and it can be exactly as he said. Yeah, sorry, that confusion was on me. I was the one that prepped this question, or this quick tip. But yeah, if you're connected,
I buried the lead.
Yeah, well, it's not on you. That's on me. If you are connected via Ethernet, turn your Wi-Fi on, but disassociate it from your network, and it will still work for continuity and all of those things. On your Mac, the way to do that is if you have the Wi-Fi menu up, simply go and you will see, if you click on the Wi-Fi menu, you'll see the list of networks, and the one that you're associated with will have like the Wi-Fi icon next to it will be blue. Click on that Wi-Fi icon. That will disconnect you from it. And I think you can even go, I'm looking here, you can even go into settings and tell it and uncheck the auto join on the little drop down list next to the network so that it doesn't continue to auto join. Of course, you want it to auto join if you're not always on Ethernet, but I'll leave that to you. Yeah.
Bonus tip on Wi-Fi on that one with that auto join thing is if you connect to public Wi-Fis that often have the same name in different locations, i.e. Starbucks or something like that, uncheck auto join if you don't want to like be randomly joining Starbucks networks as either you're driving around or even when you walk into a Starbucks, if you want to be more deliberate about knowing when you're on a public Wi-Fi.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that would also help. I've had issues with connecting to like the Xfinity network, which is pretty ubiquitous, right? Because any Xfinity provided access point will just broadcast that by default. I've had issues in my car stopped at traffic lights where it tries to associate with the Xfinity network pouring out of whatever building is next to the road there. So yeah, telling it not to auto join that. And I've had it like try to join and it doesn't. And then, you know, whatever I'm streaming doesn't work anymore.
Quit streaming. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Huh. I like that. That's a good solution for that. Yep. Yep. Bob has a follow up to something we mentioned 2 weeks ago in episode 1037 about tab switching and all of the different permutations of doing that. He says, I normalize my tab switching using Better Touch Tool. I use at least two different web browsers and two different terminal emulators, each with lots of tabs open. And of course, each of these apps has its own unique way to move to the next or previous tab. As such, I have set up Better Touch Tool to associate the same trackpad swipe gesture with each app's command key shortcut for moving tabs. I use a three-finger swipe, but there are 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 finger swipes available in Better Touch Tool, and they can be combined with modifier keys if you need to be even more unique or differentiate more. I don't like to use unique with a qualifier. It's sort of binary on its own. But if you need to differentiate it from other swipe gestures, because they do need to be unique in order for them to work. He says, this way, no matter which app I'm using, I can just swipe right or swipe left on my trackpad and move it to the next or previous tab, regardless of which app I'm in. That's a really smart thing. And there are other apps like Better Touch Tool that can be used to assign gestures or keystrokes to command key equivalents inside of apps. But that, I think that's really smart. I like that. That's good. Yeah.
Better Touch Tool. That's amazing.
Do you use it, Pete?
I do. Yeah. And that between that and Keyboard Maestro, betwixt the two, you can come up with all kinds of things. Your classic example that I started using as well is to reset the timer to 0. So you do your show notes.
Oh, when I'm recording the show. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Instead of having to hold down Shift, Control, Option, Command, and then, you know, whatever other key.
Yep.
just, you know, use the caps lock key and make that a modifier. What do they call it? Let me look.
A modifier.
It's a hyper key. Oh. You're using your caps lock as a hyper key is what it's called.
Talk about that. Oh, okay. So when you use caps lock as the hyper key, it's then like holding down shift control option command. Got it.
Yeah. Oh. And so that way you're not having to, you know, twist your knuckles into a.
Yeah.
Finger gym sticks. Yeah. We call that.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Interesting. Exactly. Okay. Yeah. For that one keystroke, which. Pete's alluding to a thing that I created. There's actually an article, I believe it's still up on Mac Observer, that talks through how I do the timestamps in the show. But as Pete says, I need to reset a timer to zero at the same time that I start the recording for the show so that everything's in sync. And when you click on a chapter, it matches where we are and all that good stuff. I intentionally have that so that I have to use two hands to invoke it because otherwise I will... accidentally invoke it and reset things and blow away the recording and like
it's,
yeah. So that was built to be difficult by design.
I see that. Yeah. By the same token, how often do you touch caps locks and you know?
I don't know, but I could touch caps lock and Z with one hand, whereas holding control option command, like I don't know.
It's tougher.
I make it tough intentionally. Yeah.
Okay. That's a good point.
But that's a me thing. Like I share it because I do it, but not because anybody else needs to do it my way. You don't want to live inside the Dave brain here. It's bad enough that one of us has to. So
well, there's that. but that whole thing with Better Touch Tool, that's amazing, and being able to modify trackpad swipes and such.
Yeah. Brilliant. I need to dig back into this. I tried to standardize on just one thing, which is for me Keyboard Maestro. Can you trigger things with mouse swipes in Keyboard Maestro though?
Almost certainly. I'd be shocked if you can't.
Right? Like can I, let's see. No. Doesn't look like it. Hang on, trackpad USB device trigger, maybe.
Yeah.
Gesture trigger. Oh yeah, for sure. Yep. Yeah, so I might be able to standardize on one app just to keep things simple so I don't have to keep multiple apps. Yeah, gesture triggers in Keyboard Maestro. All right, I gotta learn about that. Yep. It just scared me because as soon as I pulled up the gesture trigger in one of my actions, like I saw arrows like floating from my mouse cursor and was like, oh no, not right now.
Show's over, folks.
Yeah.
Glad you could be here.
Yeah. Hopefully that didn't stop the recording. So, all right. You want to take us to James?
Absolutely. Let's do that. Before anything else goes wrong. James writes in, he says, as we know, you're able to move windows from screen to screen in multiple display environments, and you can even invoke spaces by dragging a window up to the top of the screen and wait a moment for spaces to arrive, and you can move around that way. But wait, there's more. It even really catches fish. No, different one. Different commercial. But wait, there's another way. Today, I was trying to copy a photo from Photos into a messages conversation. But rather than just a simple select command C and then move back to messages and do a command P like a troglodyte, I decided to experiment. I started by dragging the photo out of Photos with the intention of dropping the image into a window, a trick that works great when Photos and messages are side by side windows. However, these were on different spaces. So I dragged the photo down to the dock, hovered over the messages icon, and this brought up the messages window. But it was still in its original space, and that didn't change. So here's the kicker. Hit the space bar. This snaps your working environment into the space or window, and you still have your photo outline grabbed. You were holding down the mouse button / trackpad the whole time, right?
I would assume.
Anyway, you have to be. And then you can drop it into the messages window, and bam. Instant attachment. So, very cool. Quick tip. Yeah.
Huh.
Because you know, you can do it obviously from Finder. You can drop a photo right in there like that.
Yeah.
But when you're doing it from photos, sometimes it gets a little wonky as to whether or not
it lets you.
It gives it to you. Yeah. And then sometimes it changes the resolution. And I don't know when it does. I suppose I could learn and know whether I'm getting full resolution or not or what. But
all right. So I have a question. Because this is something I run into scenarios like this often enough that what I wind up doing is I drag it to the desktop, right? And then I have to go find it on the desktop to drag it into the app that I want to, like I move to the app that I want to get to, and I have to drag it in there. And then it clutters up my desktop. Eventually I'll realize, oh, I got to go clean that up. I'm going to delete it from my desktop or whatever. I know that there are apps out there. We've talked about them on the show. None of them come to mind by name at the moment, but that essentially give you like a little temporary trough that you can just drag things into and then drag things out of later. And maybe you have it only hold five things or something, but essentially like a clipboard history for files that I'm dragging around to different places.
I bet SetApp's got some in it.
I bet you're right. I'm curious, of those things that any of you out there use, what's the one that, like, which ones do you like? I see in the chat, Kiwi Graham is already answering. He uses a clipboard switcher called Paste, and evidently you can drag things into that clipboard. So,
nice.
Yep. And Paul Conaway in Discord says Yoink. On iOS, Yoink is the one that I couldn't think of by name. Yes, yes.
Okay. Well, here's the other. Here's what I've always done is I take, I'll select a photo or a group of photos, and remember, you can use Shift if you want to get them contiguously, or Command if you want to skip over a photo, that sort of thing. Then I grab the, say, three photos, and then I just use Command Tab until I get to Messages, and I drop them on Messages, and it goes that way. But if I don't use spaces, and that's specifically what he was talking about in this one, that could get harder if you're using spaces.
But no, you're right about that. Like, once you've got things dragged, you can use Command Tab to switch apps. That is a good, like, that's its own quick tip, I think.
Yeah.
I use that one all the time. Yeah. I used to use, way back in the day, and it's still around, PasteBot from TapBots, because I just like TapBot apps.
Yep.
But.
And does that do the, like, drag and hold, like, does that essentially do
something?
I think
something? That was more, yeah, it was like, you could have multiple clippings and recall clippings, and you could even build sequential paste clippings, so where you stack up a bunch of things and then have them repaste in sequence, so, like, you could get multiple parts of a document.
Yep. My issue is that some of these things, and maybe it's the clipboard manager in Keyboard Maestro specifically, but my understanding is that when I run into a scenario like this, it's that the clipboard would not work for it for whatever reason. And I have to actually be dragging a file, because that dragging a file actually uses different, like, you know, frameworks in macOS to get things different places. But
I don't think this had the tray thing, though, that you're talking about. So I think got us a little off track here.
No. This is good to talk about. I think Yoink is that. Yeah, it's a shelf for your files. That's the one.
Yeah,
and
I
it is
that
in
one
setup
as well.
Yeah. Cool.
I think that one will even go do the whole between devices thing, if I'm remembering.
It looks like, I don't know if it's on.
Like, I think you can sync it through iCloud or something like that.
Yoink
is
also available for iPad, iPhone, and iPod Touch. You are correct. Yes. All right.
You may have said this. It's amazing how much you sometimes miss when we're going through these conversations, but paste is in SetApp if you didn't say that.
Oh, I did not say that. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Amazing. Amazing. Cool.
So, yeah, I got asked the other day by my wife she wanted to put BusyCal on her laptop.
Yeah.
Because she got my old laptop. And I'm like, I went and looked. And she's like, oh, it says you're all logged into SetApp to your three devices. And I go, oh, she don't pay money. I'm like, it's like $3 a month to add another machine. It's not much.
Yeah.
And it's worth every penny.
Yeah. 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 No, SetApp is great. Yep. I agree. I'm kind of sad that I can't use it on iOS currently, right?
Uh-huh.
Because if we were in the EU, then that would be an option for us. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, hey, get your VPN going. Show them that you're in the EU. Tell them you want it.
Yeah, but the iPhone, we've already talked about this. The iPhone knows I'm not in the EU, even if I have a VPN running. So
dang it.
I'd have to hack the GPS satellites again, and that just gets so tedious.
Right. Yeah, the Department of the Army gets all upset.
Super upset. Like they did. Yeah.
The airliner's landing at the wrong airports.
Yeah, it's like war games in my yard again. It's terrible.
Yeah.
I stumbled onto a thing this week that made me super happy. I am subbing for a friend's band later next month, and I have to like learn a bunch of the songs that they play, cover songs. And so he sent me a spreadsheet that listed kind of the songs actually in the orders that we plan to play them on this, at least on this particular night. I don't know if they have a set show or whatever, but whatever, doesn't matter. And it included the name of the artist, the name of the song, and I think maybe even the key that was in, because that's super important for me on the drums. And then and then it had Spotify links for each of the songs, which is really helpful. Sometimes people do YouTube links. Sometimes people do Spotify links. But to the version that the band has learned, right? Sometimes it's, you know, the studio version that's kind of the default version. Yeah. But other times it's a live version because, you know, a studio version where it fades out is never going to, like, how do you want to do that on stage? I've always said that Tom Petty's American Girl is like the great litmus test as to whether or not someone has done their homework coming into the gig. Because if you say to a sub, hey, let us know if you have any questions about like song endings or whatever. If you've got American Girl on your set list, which fades out on the record, every band has come up with their own way to end it. And if you don't ask the question, it means you didn't do your homework. So I had this list of Spotify URLs and I'm like, great. Well, but it's like, you know, 35 of them or something. I do want to build a Spotify playlist of this, and I do keep Spotify and Apple Music, and this is the primary reason I keep Spotify is so that I can share links with musicians, friends. And I thought, wouldn't it be great if I could just copy that list of links from the spreadsheet and paste it into the Spotify app in a new playlist and have it auto-populate? And you know what? I can, and so
Very
can
cool.
you. Yep, it just works.
So I've got a question, though.
Yeah?
And this, the we're into the gig gab here, I guess.
Yeah, Dave. Right. But, yeah.
So how do you learn a song?
Oh.
Do you listen to it and play along with it? Do you have the drum sheet music for?
It depends on the song. Okay. You know, for the majority of what we call GB songs, which are general business songs, so, you know, mm-hmm. Tom Petty's American Girl, Sweet Home Alabama, You May Be Right by Billy Joel, right? Like the classic rock canon, but it's more than just classic rock. It's the GB songs, right? General business stuff that most cover bands play. And songs like those, usually I don't need to read the music for it. I can listen to it. I can hear how it goes. And then either... if I know it, well, great. Then I just play along with the radio in my head when we're playing the song, like on stage. But if it's a song that's new to me, what I will do is print out, or I don't print anything anymore. I put it on my iPad. Not the sheet music for the song, but if you go to like Ultimate Guitar, whatever, you can find chord sheets that list just the chords that are played along with where the lyrics are for those chords. They match up kind of the chords and the lyrics. And I will grab PDFs of that, put them on my iPad, and then I've come up with my own sort of shorthand for, all right, you know, here's where the drums come in. You know, does everybody start together or is there a guitar intro for, you know, how long is it? And I can quickly, in less than the time it would take me to listen to the song, I can chart it out. And so I just sit there on my couch while the songs are playing and I just start charting things. Occasionally I'll need to pause it if there's like a rhythmic figure that I need to play specifically with the band or something as opposed to whatever fill comes to mind. But if there's a rhythmic thing, then I will write out my own little, you know, two measures worth of sheet music essentially to like, here's the figure to play. But Or if it's got a weird groove or something, if it's not just like a straightforward groove that I can describe quickly with words, I will chart out like, okay, here's the verse groove and like play that. And then usually that's enough to get me there.
But so when you say rhythmic figure, that's the changing of the tempo of the...
No, the rhythms that I'm playing on the drums. So, you know, if the song is like, you know, kick, snare, kick, snare, kick, snare with eighth notes on the hi-hat. I can write that out. I write eighth notes for the hi-hat. I write two and four on the snare, one and three on the kick or whatever. But usually I don't have to write that out. I can just write. Standard
shorthand
beat. Write standard groove, and then, okay. and then I know. All right, it's a 2-4 groove, you know. But again, that's my own shorthand, and I've had people. I subbed for a friend's band years ago out in California, Paul Kent's band, and I made up charts for a bunch of the tunes, and then he had another sub a year later, and he was like, "Can you share the charts with him?" I'm like, "Well, I can, but I don't think they're going to mean as much to him as they do to me, because he now needs to learn how to get inside my head." But
it's already crowded in there.
It's already and we've already established he doesn't want to do that. So that's how that all works.
All right, folks, you ever feel like your live streams and videos are missing that extra spark? Well, don't get caught looking like an amateur. Check out our sponsor, Ecamm Live, the all-in-one live streaming and video production studio for your Mac. Whether you're streaming, podcasting, running meetings, or just recording videos, Ecamm has got you covered. You can stream and multi-stream. You can record high-quality videos. You can present seamlessly into apps like Zoom, Teams, and Meet. So much. It's like having a full video production studio at your fingertips. Camera switching, adding graphics, lower thirds, logos, bringing in guests, you name it, Ecamm does it. It's super easy to get started and fully customizable for all of you tech tinkerers out there. It'll be as complex as you want it to be and as simple as you want it to be at the same time. We've known the folks at Ecamm for a very long time. We've used their tools for years. And Ecamm Live is as absolutely fantastic as you would expect from them. So are you ready to level up? You can learn more at www.ecamm.live. You get 1 month free of Ecamm Live using our promo code MacGeekGab at checkout. That's 1 month free of Ecamm Live when you use promo code MacGeekGab at checkout. Don't get caught without it. And our thanks to Ecamm Live for sponsoring this episode. All right, I've got a question for you. Have you ever felt like your email provider is spying on you more than your nosy neighbor? Well, don't get caught with a creepy inbox. I've been using Fastmail, our sponsor, for years, and it is hands down my favorite email service provider. Fastmail is an independent, employee-owned provider that's been offering a premium inbox experience for over 20 years. No ads, no creepy data sharing, just a clean interface and innovative features that value your time. For as little as $5 a month, you get a private inbox. And with their new multi-user plans, it's more affordable than ever to secure email for your household or your business. Share custom domains, manage separate personal and work emails, and enjoy features like scheduled send, snooze, and custom swipes. Plus, Fastmail's got 24/7 human support and seamless integration with password managers like 1Password and Bitwarden. So don't get caught in the email dark ages. Make email better for you with Fastmail. Try Fastmail free for 30 days and get 10% off your first year at fastmail.com/MGG. Again, that's fastmail.com/MGG. You can make your email work for you, and our thanks to Fastmail for doing what they do. Like I said, I've been using them for years and for sponsoring this episode. All right. Let's do some questions. And I think Felix will kick us off.
Hey, guys. How's it going? My name's Felix. I'm a longtime listener of the show. And I have a question for you about Spotlight search and indexing. So I have an M1 MacBook Pro 16-inch model running Ventura 13.6.6. And the problem is that every time, well, not every time, but annoyingly often, I'm searching for files and I do like the command spacebar shortcut and it can't find a file because indexing is running.
Ooh.
And my question is, how do I get the system to work but not be indexing all the time? Hoping you guys know a workaround. I'm aware of the setting or sort of hack where you go into system settings and you go into Spotlight Privacy, add the drive or the folder that you want Spotlight to avoid indexing, and then add it and then you remove it. Is there a better way of doing that? And what are the consequences for adding or putting something in there permanently? Does that mean that if you add a location in there, Spotlight does not search that location or doesn't update that location? I'd appreciate understanding how that all works. Thank you so much.
Thanks for the question, Felix. So, I believe this has changed over the years, but kind of starting with the latter half of this, I believe that the adding to that and removing it from there doesn't necessarily impact the index itself. It just impacts where results are going to come from. It may stop it from doing future indexing, but I also don't think, and again, this may have changed, I could be very wrong on this, feedback@macgeekab.com. I don't think it deletes the index and then recreates it. So, while that can sometimes solve a problem, my proposed solution would be to ensure we are deleting that Spotlight index and allowing it to get recreated from scratch, because it sounds like it's corrupted. So I would delete the Spotlight index either from the command line with the mdutil command or from Onyx. If you don't want to mess with the command line, and Onyx is free and it will do it for you and it deletes it, and then, you know, we'll rebuild it, but hopefully only one more time. That's my thoughts. Adam, I see you shaking your head or nodding.
Yeah. I thought that the whole ad thing did delete, but now you're getting me to question myself.
It might.
It did back in the day, like
okay.
Way, way long ago, but I haven't done it in years. Oddly, I was just saying in the pre-show, somehow I've never had issues with Spotlight. My Spotlight got messed up, so I'm going to be doing this exact same thing at some point probably here. The app I think I use, and I was just going to double check that it's in here under maintenance, but I'm pretty sure that it is. I use Clean My Mac 10.
Oh,
or
yeah.
X, excuse me.
Yeah. Okay.
Clean My Mac X.
Yep.
Which has a re-index Spotlight option.
And do we know if that deletes it? Because I ask this because I know that you can tell Spotlight to re-index and replace the index, but if the database files themselves have some corruption in them,
right,
that doesn't always do it. I know that Onyx deletes the Spotlight index, and you can also do that with the mdutil command. I wouldn't just
right.
delete the files outright like that. I don't know what would happen.
I'm looking at Clean My Mac, and it's not clear. It says reindexing. This initiates a complete reindexing of your Mac's main search engine.
Yeah. Okay.
Does that mean it deletes it? Or
I don't know.
It sounds like if it's a complete reindex, I would imagine it has to reset it back to zero and start from nothing. But
I would agree.
Yeah.
Yep. I would agree. Yeah.
It doesn't say it deletes it, though. It
right.
says a complete reindex.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But the way, like you say, though, the assumption, I think, is a fair one, because the folks at MacPaw are pretty yeah. smart, thorough guys when it comes to, you know, they're going to go, it would create more problems, right?
Yes.
Than it's worth not to
yes.
delete it.
Yeah. And I will find the right Spotlight command. I have it in my head. It's like with it, it's got a dash E on it or something. But anyway, I'll look at the man page
yeah.
for, or maybe the TLDR page for mdutil. Does that exist? It does. So TLDR is this awesome thing, command to install into your terminal, because you can issue what I just typed was TLDR space and then the command mdutil, and it shows me for this one the four most common invocations of that command and what they each do. And
MDUtil-E with a path to the volume is the one that that I wanted to do here. So I will put this command in the show notes to highlight what it does.
I'm assuming that's a homebrew brew install.
TLDR is installable with homebrew. Yeah, brew install TLDR. And yeah.
I didn't know about that one. That's my tip for this week for sure.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
After the show.
Yep.
So I got to jump in here because we talk about homebrew all the time.
Yep.
Like everyone knows what it is and uses it. We want a brief description of what that is as well.
Yep. So homebrew allows you to install commands into your terminal easily. It's the right word for it is that it is a package manager. But if you're not used to using a terminal, then you would never have heard that term before. So so think of it as like the free app store for the terminal. You install Homebrew, and then from there you can install and remove and update other terminal-based apps.
Yeah, I use it for a lot of web development stuff. So I use it to update and install things like Apache web servers and MySQL Maria database apps and all that fun stuff, along with a bunch of other things.
Yep.
But yeah, there's also all the, you know, so there's a lot of command line things that, you know, Apple chooses to add or remove at different points. So that another great one is, I think I use it to install wget instead of, because that got removed
in favor of,
I think, curl, yeah. which is a utility for pinging or hitting websites, you know, like.
Yeah.
Simplifying it, but, you know, basically, it's a way to, like, hit a URL from the command line.
I'm trying to make sure I credit the right person. CGHMCCC in the Discord chat says, make sure to mention Cake. Also, Cake used to be an app a Mac GUI app, a windowed Mac app that allowed you to manage homebrew installations, install, update, remove, all that stuff. Cake doesn't seem to exist as Cake anymore, but I did find something called Cake Brew at cakebrew.com, which appears to be the same thing. So I will put a link to Cake Brew in the show notes, but
there you go.
Yeah.
I used brew.sh.
Well, brew.sh is where you're going to go and install homebrew.
Yes. Right. Okay.
But then once you do that, you have to install and manage packages from the terminal. Cake Brew lets you install and manage them from a windowed interface.
From a GUI.
Yeah, it's great.
Graphical user interface.
Nice. Yeah, so you get to see what's installed. I want to have this on my Macs. Like, it's ridiculous that I know I'm comfortable with the terminal, but being able to just see this stuff makes life way easier. So
sure.
Yeah. So I need to install Cake Brew as well. I'm not going to do it right now. I'm gonna wait. So thank you, CJ.
Oh, go ahead, Dave. What could go wrong?
Well, you want a list?
Use Arc while you're doing it.
Yeah. All right.
Should we help Doug?
Yes, please.
Try and help Doug here. Yeah. So Doug says, I present weekly in a church setting. I use an iPad to control the keynote presentation, which is on a computer in the back of the room. I know that the issue is not related to distance because I have no issues whatsoever when I practice on Sundays. So this is controlling the keynote presentation. Here's the issue. When I'm speaking, I use an iPad Pro 4 to advance or choose the next slide. Every week now, it will hang. What I mean by hang is that it will be very slow to advance, or it may not advance at all. The person in the control area often has to advance the presentation. The lag problem does not show itself on Saturdays when I practice. There are only two things that are different on Sunday. I have a theory that either the lag is due to Bluetooth or Wi-Fi interference from other devices or the act of active streaming. Do you have any ideas? That's because they're also streaming via OBS. And so he says, I would also be open to other software other than OBS, which is a streaming app. But, you know, we're a small church. Thanks, Doug. And he says, P.S., I came to your show because I used to be a MacCast listener, and I enjoy listening and learning. Well, welcome, Doug. Thanks for coming over.
There you go. Awesome. I tried to answer this one, and but I think he's got it down right. It's Wi-Fi and or Bluetooth interference when there's a bunch of people betwixt him and the control center with their iPhones and Androids on. There's all kinds of extra noise, and as someone pointed out, especially if the Wi-Fi in the church is open and shared with the congregation, now it's really slowing things down on probably something that's not even a prosumer level.
Yeah, yeah. Router. Somebody pointed out, I think, in the chat, like, if it was open, you know, even if people aren't using their devices, we have iCloud syncing and photo syncing and, like, you know, yeah, somebody hits exactly that network and suddenly it's just like, blah, blah, blah.
So if so the first thing I would say is I would say get, if you are doing that, then take your church router and set that up so that you have a guest network and a separate Wi-Fi on the network that you're on, that the, you know, the clergy and the lay readers and that sort of thing. And then the other thing I said was, have the person up in the control center use an iPad to advance, since they're sitting right there next to it.
Which maybe is what they're doing. I mean, yeah.
Or, I'm assuming they're using the trackpad or the arrow keys on the Mac itself.
I see. Just as a test to use the one in the.
If you're closer to it, is the interference from across the room worse than, but yeah, the
I have,
needs to give.
I have
something
some,
got to give.
Well, I would test it on Saturday with OBS, right? First of all, just to either to rule that out, right? So, you know, one variable at a time, make sure that, you know, do a stream with OBS, see if that causes the issue. If it does, well, now you know kind of where to troubleshoot. The theater that I play at and will be playing at twice today after we finish recording this show, does a lot with wireless technology, like in the show. In fact, the show that we're doing right now, Spring Awakening, which will wrap up before this episode is released, they're using wireless cameras on stage to then display on a screen there, and they're using AirPlay at times to do it all. And they ask patrons, no one does this, to turn off their phones so that there's not as much in the room. But what they don't tell patrons is that they run a separate Wi-Fi network just for the cast to use. And oftentimes they don't do this in the theater, but you'll see this if you go to like venues that have big concert venues that have Wi-Fi, they'll have a network for if they have a network for the patrons or whatever, that will be a different network from the one that is for like production or another one for audio. And they're all on different frequencies. So you could try, if you do have a network, split it, maybe offer offer 2.4 gigahertz for your patrons and then run 5 gigahertz only for you on the iPad. Right. Yes. And that way you're completely separated from one another. Like there's ne'er the two shall meet. That might really help. And password off, of course, the one that you're using for your production. So hopefully.
Yeah. What about hiding the SSD? Necessary or not?
I feel like that's one of those kind of urban legends that helps. I don't know.
I guess if you password protected it, that should be enough. I'm just thinking that if someone sees it and starts trying to hack the password, now the router's trying to pay attention to that too.
Okay.
Although not enough. Someone would really have to be hammering it.
Yeah. And I feel like if somebody were doing that during church service, there might be someone upstairs that would want to have a word with them. That's all I'm going to say.
In the balcony, you mean?
That's what I meant. Yeah, in the balcony. Correct. Yes, Pete. I don't know. It just seems like, maybe if somebody's spending most of church service trying to manually brute force hack the Wi-Fi password, there's maybe another lesson to be learned here.
That's right. Yeah. Here in today's lesson.
Yes. Right. I don't know. It seems like, I don't know if there's a certain chapter and verse that addresses this, but maybe there is. It's been a while since I've read the Bible. It is a fascinating read. I read it in college. I loved it. It's fascinating. And it's like the most popular book. It's like, why not?
Yeah.
Yeah. It is the bestseller of all time. So, All right. Where are we here? So, there you go. That's the thing. But, yeah, I don't think hiding the SSID is as helpful as we like to make it. We like to think that it is. So, yeah. All right. Moving on to David. Yeah?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
David has a simple question. If I can ever... I know where I put it. And now I know why I can't find it. Great. David says... Can I teach my iPhone to change its default way of spelling a word that is dictated to it? My example is if I verbally fill in a message field, like in iMessage, and I say the word OK, in my mind, I am thinking of that as the four-letter version of OK, O-K-A-Y. iOS will invariably replace it with the two-letter version of OK. I realize this is a fairly trivial problem. However, apparently I use that word more than I would have thought when I'm messaging people, and it turns out I really don't like it when my iPhone sends it with the shorthand spelling abbreviation. I guess I don't like looking lazy when I'm typing things out. So, can I change this default spelling? It's not really an autocorrect issue, because if I type out the word OKAY, iOS does not have any issue, nor does it offer to replace it. But when I say it out loud, it thinks I am saying it as the letters, no matter how many times I've previously overridden that spelling choice or typed out OKAY manually. I think I've also encountered this occasionally with the spelling of a name, but I can't recall now which words those would have been. But I do remember wondering if I could teach the app how to spell a name that I know I will be using again and again. Any thoughts, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, my immediate thought when I saw this was to use text replacements, the default text replacements with, I would assume you'd have to do like the same word, like instead of doing an autocorrect or maybe both invocations where OK equals OK spelled out and OK equals, it seems odd to do the second one. I don't know if that would be required or not. I've never played around with this, but that you can't really teach, there's nothing to like to define the dictionary that Apple uses. So I would think you'd have to go into settings, general, keyboard, text replacements, and play around with that and see if some combination of that. I'm only hesitating because, you know, normally the way that would work is you're typing, right? And it makes the suggestion, or you finish it and it does the auto replacement. So I would assume that works with dictation as well. So you would hope it does.
Yeah. One would think.
I like your idea of putting two entries into text replacements. So one would be, the letters OK, and then the replacement would be OKAY. And then the second would be OKAY replaced with OKAY. And we've found that we found that second version is the answer to the I want to teach my iPhone that my last name is a correct spelling, even though you think it's not, or, you know, something like that.
Right. I was going to say, a weird place name or an individual's name. Yeah.
Yeah. So you put the same thing in twice for that. But I don't know if that informs the dictation engine.
Right. Yeah. That's the question mark that I have. So you might have to play around with it. And we may have to come back to this if that's not the solution, but it's worth trying.
Yep.
Yeah. The other thing I'll mention, and I think I've mentioned that I do this with text replacements, is if you're like me and just a bad typer, there's certain words that I constantly mistype. Download is one of them. For some reason, I always swap the O and the A.
Yeah.
So I put text replacements in for that. Like the I'm going to type this wrong. Fix it for me.
Yeah, right. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't know. Well, I think what we've learned from this is that okay is a four-letter word.
Yes.
Yes. That's right.
And that's okay.
Now, when you said it, though, you said okay with just the two letters, right, Pete?
Yes.
Okay, just making sure. Block Tech has a question. This is going to be, I would call it a geek challenge. And if someone does have an answer for this, great. But I don't know that an answer even exists for this. He shares, when someone calls me for Mac support that isn't particularly tech savvy, my go-to screen sharing method is to request screen sharing through messages, through iMessage. When it works, it is brilliant. All it requires is that the remote back be set up to receive messages on the user's iCloud account, and I can go from there. Don't have to waste a lot of time talking the client through installation and registration of a special app, or talking them through how to share their screen via Zoom and turning on permissions and all of that. If it's someone I work with often, I will install the SplashTop client, and all they have to do is enter my email address and password for me to get access. However, screen sharing via messages only seems to work about 50% of the time. Often the sharing request doesn't even appear on the client's thread on my machine, or if it does, they simply never get the request. I've played around a lot with various settings on my client's machines, sharing, privacy, etc., but nothing seems to enable sharing this way on a Mac that doesn't initially and reliably just work. When Apple needs to remote control their customer screens, it also seems to just work flawlessly. I suspect they're using the same method or something similar, though maybe they have a little backdoor built in that supersedes any settings that would normally block screen sharing. Any ideas? No. I've seen this. How about you guys?
Is it? So I haven't used this feature too much. I'm assuming when you request screen sharing, there's a notification that maybe pops up that the person needs to accept.
Yes. Maybe being the operative word. Yes.
Okay.
It sometimes shows up. Sometimes it doesn't at all.
And well, that's what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
That's what I'm getting. That's where my thought is going is, so sometimes it's not showing up. Is it possible the client has Do Not Disturb or some other focus mode turned on that's blocking the notification?
I mean, I'll answer your question. Yes, it's possible. I know I've done it with people where I've had them request to let me share their screen so that I'm controlling the system.
Gotcha.
That should
be. It still
be.
Didn't work.
And it's like, I know that I'm getting notifications. Like I know what I've got on my computer. No, and even when the notification does appear and you say, yes, let's go, sometimes, I would say more frequently, it's at that point that it just, to say that it beach balls or spins would imply that there's indication that something is waiting to happen. It's not. You click the thing and it's like, gone. That's it.
It's like but, QuickTime or FaceTime screen sharing all over again. What we had back in the day, it's like they've never gotten this right. Like, they've implemented screen sharing in different apps over the years, in different ways over the years. And for some reason, Apple can't seem to get it reliable is what I'm feeling like here.
You're right. And my guess is it is the same underlying engine that we had in FaceTime, because now FaceTime and messages are sort of, you know, related to each other. The fact, though, that he says, And I agree with this, that it does seem to just work when Apple invokes it, makes me wonder if there's something specific about networks, like, you know, holes poked in the firewall, some sort of port map, whatever magic that needs to happen, because there is some magic that needs to happen there. And I wonder if Apple has their network set up to be the most friendly for that. Like, I wonder if that is the clue to the answer here.
Well, yeah. The question is, how can I make messages screen sharing?
Yeah.
More reliable. Yeah. So I'm not sure that you can, or that it has to be messages, but there is the screen sharing app.
Well, yeah, but
and once you have their Apple ID, that always seems to work. I've never had a problem with that.
Whereas that gets really tricky.
Okay. Well,
you've had good luck with the screen sharing app?
I have. And I've, because the thing is, when you're on messages, now are you trying to screen share their iPhone, their iPad, their laptop,
yes,
their iMac? You know, then it becomes, my answer is, I don't know that you can make messages screen sharing more reliable. It depends on their side, which device they're on, and are they signed into all four devices at the same time, that sort of thing. Whereas the screen sharing app, when you have their Apple ID, I've just, again, they could be signed into all four devices, but I think they're going to see.
Interesting. I never thought about that, but you're right. Like, if I open up, so the screen sharing app is, let's see, where is it buried?
Applic- It's in utilities.
Utilities. Yeah.
Is it in utilities now?
It is now.
Way buried in some weird place. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but you can invoke it with Spotlight, assuming you've taken our previous tips and made your Spotlight work.
right.
But yeah, you can invoke it with Spotlight or just launch it from utilities. And interestingly, Pete, I launched my screen sharing app and I have two entries in there. One is for the office, the Mac Mini I have in my office. And the second is for you.
Yeah.
Like just your Apple ID showing up there. So that's interesting. I never thought about,
And I'll add this too. There's a thing called screen sharing menulet, which kind of it puts it up into the bar. So that's a quick way to invoke the screen sharing app.
Huh.
I think you have to install that separately. I don't know that that's native to.
No, I think that's a third party thing. Yeah. But yeah. Interesting. All right. Well, I'll put a link to that in the show notes too. Huh.
Yeah. Good. I don't know. Kiwi Graham put in the Discord chat that, you know,
I like his idea.
I just fall back to Zoom. Like Zoom these days, it's easy enough to install. And I don't think it's that complex for most people to get set up. Like you launch it. And if you try to share the screen, I'm pretty sure it says, it gives you the message, hey, you need to go into system preferences and allow this, but like allow it. And it just always just seems to
agree. That's one of the silver linings of the COVID lockdowns we all went through is that most everyone already has Zoom, is comfortable using it. Like all of those things kind of happened. And it was a really, I mean, obviously Zoom made a lot of money from that, but I agree with you that Zoom is my path with people is, all right, let's try this in messages, but we're probably going to need to move to Zoom, and I will try once in messages. But I might try in the screen sharing app the next time messages fails for me.
Yeah, I've been able to help my mother-in-law and all that with that. And then just real quickly, Brian Monroe points out that, you know, the way Apple has their network set up, as long as the tool is built for modern OSs, he thinks it does not require a login, unlike screen sharing, the way screen sharing does. And he thinks that that's the key. And I will point out, anyone who's ever done this, Apple does something different, because if you get to something that has a password window, it automatically disconnects them. So they can't see your password.
Right.
You can't, even if you tell them, hey, look, just, you know, I don't care if you see the password to this one. They can't. It's not possible for them to stay connected if a password window comes up.
That's true.
Interesting. So. Yep. The one caveat to, I think, screen sharing in Zoom, though, is, right, you can't remote control an iOS device. Where I think with messages, I think you can, right?
Can you control an iPad?
I think so.
I don't know.
Apple can. I didn't know that you or I could. We'll have to test that. Or send us a note.
I thought you could these days.
Maybe you can. Feedback@MacGeekGab.com. If so, that passed me by. Wow. All right.
Hold on. You said feedback@MacGeekGab.com. That's what you said?
Yeah. Feedback@MacGeekGab.com.
Okay. All right. Got it.
Feedback@MacGeekGab.com.
Yeah.
All right. I had
something brilliant to say about that, and then we went into the shtick.
I'll come back to it, I promise. All right, good. We are running short on time in a variety of ways, but let's see if we can do Mark's question quickly here for us, please.
Oh, we could do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Mark wrote in, he says, I'm spending a lot of time outside of the U.S. and my roaming charges are out of control. Well, I can use a local eSIM to get cheap local data and calls. It's the cost of receiving calls or texts to my roaming U.S. number that are killing me. I had thought about switching to a Skype in number or even a VoIP provider and giving that to everyone instead, but I'm concerned about all those services that insist on sending you a 6-digit text code to verify you. Skype explicitly says they don't support that, and from what I read, the VoIP providers suffer the same problem. Their numbers are blacklisted for verification purposes. Does anyone have any suggestions?
I do, because I do this with some things, and my daughter does it with way more things. She recently moved to Italy, as I think I've mentioned,
She took her phone number and ported it to a Google Voice number so that she still retains her old U.S. phone number, even though her current phone number is an Italian number. She can get all the 2FA text messages to her Google Voice number. And then, of course, anybody that sends her a text message, you know, if they forget or they don't know that her number changed years ago, she still gets all that stuff. But I was just working with her the other day. And her bank text, her U.S.-based bank texted her a 2FA authentication code to Google Voice. And it, you know, just showed up in her email because that's how that works. But it would show up in the Google Voice app on the phone. So I think Google Voice might be your best bet for this. And then you can make calls with Google Voice using IP, you know, using like data as opposed to, you know, voice minutes. So that's my thought.
Also, does a really nice job of screening calls for you.
It does.
If you set it up to do that.
Yeah, it's got a fun little interface for that.
Your name and I'll get back to you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty good. It's pretty good. Yep.
Yeah.
All right.
And then WhatsApp is almost universal in Europe and Asia.
But that's different.
Because someone's still texting his numbers. That's a problematic part of the issue there.
So you can port your... You can port a cell phone number into Google Voice. So if you still have an old landline or a VoIP number from another provider, you often are going to have to make the hop via a cell phone number. When I did it for myself, but also with my daughter, we jumped. Oh, well, hers was her cell phone, so that didn't matter. But just getting a short use SIM, and you know, I ported my Xfinity voice number or something to a T-Mobile number for 3 days, which then as soon as it became a T-Mobile number, I could port it to Google Voice and it's just parked there forever. And Google Voice is still free. So, you know, yep. Yep.
There you go.
All right.
I remembered my brilliant point from the last one. So let me not, I'm sorry, Adam, did I cut you off?
No, you're good.
Oh, okay. Jump desktop. Just jump desktop.
Okay. We'll put that link in the show notes.
Another way to quickly control other computers and iOS devices.
Yep. Great.
And that does a lot of hole poking through firewalls and ports and all that.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Cool.
And my correction is, as Brian pointed out in Discord, you cannot remote control an iOS device in any way because of security. What I was confused about is I said remote control. I use the screen share feature, which you can enable from FaceTime when you're on a FaceTime call. You can have the other person at least share their iPad or iPhone screen and walk them through so you can see what they're doing. I've had to use it with my mom in the past. Yeah. It's like, because I'm trying to explain without that, no, go here, go there. And if I can get her to bring up the screen, then I can say, see that there, because I often can't specifically remember where things are either. And if I'm talking on my phone, I can't look at my phone, or I got to go get headphones, you know. So,
yep.
You can share the screen, you cannot control the screen on an iOS device.
And Zoom actually makes it pretty smooth to share your iPhone screen either in a wired capacity or a wireless AirPlay capacity with Zoom on your Mac. So you can, the same thing, there's no controlling of it remotely, but you can share it, it's there. So, yeah.
Yeah, there's a share content button when you're in a FaceTime call. It looks like a little screen with a little person by it.
Yep. Cool. All right, folks, thanks for hanging out with us. I do want to take a minute and thank everybody whose contributions came into Mac Geek Gab Premium. We had CJ ask, do you take contributions via Discord? We don't yet. We've talked about that. There's so many different paths. Right now, the best path, I think, is to use our premium system at MacGeekGab.com/premium. You can use Apple Pay there. You can do whatever you want. Again, it's, as I always say, it is optional. It is appreciated, not required. So I want to thank the following people for $10 contributions. Let's see. We have Daniel in San Diego, John in Wake Forest, Michael in Robbins, Felix in Princeton, Joseph in Marietta, Paul in Lawrenceville, Kevin in Edison, Barry in Des Plaines, Jeff in Chesterton, Bill with an APO box, James in Amity Harbor, Thank you all for your $10 contributions and $25 contributions in the past week or so from Rick in Traverse City, Harvey in Shoreham, Monroe in Morgantown, Mark in Knoxville, Jim in Harvard, John in Fredericton, and Timothy in Coralville. So thanks to all of you for your contributions. And again, it's MacGeekab.com/premium if you want to learn more about all of that. We didn't get to everything we wanted to this week, guys, so we're going to have to do another show next week. So that's just how it's going to
be. All right. I guess.
we get to do another show next week. Let me put it that way.
Yeah. All right.
Exactly. Yeah, that's how I feel about it, too. Thanks to CashFly for providing all the bandwidth to get the show from us to you. Make sure you check out Pete's other shows. So There I Was, my other shows, Gig Gab, which Pete mentioned earlier in the episode, and Business Brain. They're all linked in the show notes. You can follow us on all the socials. That's all linked in the show notes, too. Make sure to check out our sponsors. You can go to MacGeekab.com/sponsors. That lists everything and is routinely updated. But for this episode, of course, ecam.live. Sorry. And fastmail.com/MGG. One last piece of advice, Adam? Anything?
I would say don't get caught.
Made up.
See ya.
Later.